I'm excited to be here this morning. Thankful for the opportunity to come here. Good to see all of you here this morning. And I'm excited to be able to kick off this youth weekend with this topic of breaking the mold. And so we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about that this morning and what all that means, and hopefully give us some good stuff to take with us from here. You know, we as human beings, we have this natural tendency to copy other things or to mimic other things, right? We see something that we like, or we see something that other people like, and we think, hey, I want to be like that. I want to put myself into that particular mold. And so we tend to gravitate towards those things, to copy those things, and to mimic those things. And that's how we end up with some of these crazy fashions that come along, right? We've all looked at our parents' old pictures, right? You pull out the old pictures and you look at them, like, especially the 70s, right? And you start looking at it and you're like, you thought that hairstyle was cool? You know, and you actually wore those kinds of pants and shirts. I mean, you look at it and you think, how in the world was that ever in style? Well, somewhere along the line, somebody thought it was cool. And then everybody just started mimicking that other person. And so you ended up with all these people wearing this crazy dress, looking all crazy. And so I can say all that because I was way after the 70s. I was born in 82, so I missed it by 2 years. But so, you know, we see that, though, where we have this natural tendency to want to copy things and want to mimic things. And so it's important for us to realize that our human nature, our human tendency is to copy things and to mimic other things. And it should cause us to step back for just a minute and say, okay, in my life, what is it exactly? What things am I mimicking? What things am I copying in my life? And is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? It's important for us to understand also that everybody wants to put us as individuals into a mold. Everybody, there are great forces out there that are trying to influence us and trying to put us inside of a mold, to put us inside of a shape, to make us look like something. You know, you think about when I think about a mold, I think of something like a Jell-O mold. You know, you pour it in there and then you put them out. You know, the Jell-O jigglers. You remember the Jell-O jigglers? Those were big, like, I don't know when that was, the 90s. Maybe that's pretty, I'm going to show my age now. You probably like Jell-O jigglers. I don't know. But Bill Cosby came out, the Jell-O jigglers. You know, everybody wanted to be Jell-O jigglers. And so they started giving, you could send in the UPC points. I remember saving them off the Jell-O packets, right? And so you'd send them in, they'd send you the Jell-O mold. And so you pour the Jell-O in there, and then you had these Jell-O jigglers. And it was every single time you poured them in there, it came out looking the exact same way. Well, in the same way, there are so many forces out there that want to take us as individuals and put us inside of a mold to make us look like something, to make us think a certain way, to make us act a certain way. And so we're going to talk about this morning, we're going to talk about breaking the mold. And specifically, when we're talking about breaking the mold, we're going to talk about breaking the world's mold and determining what exactly is the mold that we want to fit into. And so we're going to kind of take a look at this at more of a broad and more of a generic way. And then some of the lessons that follow me, they're going to talk about some very specific ways in which this plays out. But we're going to talk about this idea of breaking the mold to begin with. First of all, let's think about influences. Because when we think about molds, it's influences. Those are the forces, those are the things that are working to push us and to fit us into one particular mold or another. And so there's three big influences that I want to talk about that affect us directly, and especially when you're at a time where you're very you're very moldable. You know, we're kind of at an age and a time when we're very easily influenced by things. And so there are people out there that know that. They know that at a certain age and a certain point in your life, you're starting to develop more and you're starting to think on your own and you're starting to formulate your own ideas about things. And people know this. And so they know it's important that if they want to get what they want down the road, they've got to influence you now. And one of those influences that comes into play is the influence that takes place as a result of peers, people your own age, people basically in the same group that you're in. And so a lot of times there'll be people that will come in and they'll be in your peer groups. And there's all this pressure, there's tons of pressure to look and to act and to be just like your peers, right? We know this is true because when we go to school and we walk around the campus, you know, we see all these groups, right? And they're all definable. You can tell, you can look at a person, you can tell, you know exactly what group that person's in. You can look at that person, that's definitely, that guy's a jock. You know, you can tell just by the way he dresses and everything. That's a skater guy, he goes in that group. And you start to formulate these peer groups. And if you want to be in with that in crowd, what do you have to do? You got to make yourself fit into that same mold, right? You can't, if you showed up in cowboy boots, Wranglers, and a straw hat, and you tried to join the skater group, what's going to happen? right? It's not going to go over real well. You'll probably last inside there about 5 seconds, and then you'll probably end up getting beat up, something along those lines. At least I don't know how they do things around here. That's how they did things where I'm from in the valley. So you got to fit the mold if you want to be a part of that group. And so there's all these peer groups out there that are trying to influence you to conform to what they are. Now, this isn't necessarily good, and it's not necessarily bad. It's possible that, you know, hey, I may like to wear Wranglers and cowboy boots, which I don't, but let's say I do. And Steven over here, he likes to wear Levi's and Vans and a t-shirt, right? And so, well, which one's right? Well, you know, basically, of course, you know, the guy with the Vans and the t-shirt, he's the guy that's right, because that's what I like to wear. But it's like, which one's right, right? You're both dressing modestly, you know, you got to take all those things into consideration, but all those things taken into consideration, you know, it's pretty much neutral. And so that in and of itself isn't necessarily a good thing or a bad thing. And so you need to step back for a second and look at this and say, okay, what is it involved in all of that? What are some of the other influences that come along with those peer groups? What are some of the other things that those are going to? What's the culture? You remember this? I remember seeing these stickers everywhere. Skateboarding is not a crime. Anybody remember seeing those bumper stickers, right? Skateboarding is not a crime. And you know what I used to always say to that? Yes, but skateboarders are criminals, right? Because it seemed like you would always see the signs up, right? No skateboarding. And every time you see a no skateboarding sign, what did you always see? Skateboarders, right? They were always... No skateboarding, then that's exactly... They could have all this other area that wasn't off limits, but they had to go to the point, you know, it's like... Why is that? Because it was part of the culture, right? The rebellion. We're gonna break the law. We're gonna rebel against the culture. And so if they say we can't do it, we're going to do it, right? So wearing the dress, you know, the Vans, the jeans and the t-shirt aren't necessarily a bad thing, but what about all the other cultural influences that are part of that peer group? Well, those are a reality of the world that we live in, that these peer groups, oftentimes, there's a culture involved in that, and they have an influence on us. And so it's important for us to remember what Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33. Paul said, "Do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals." Now, I think it's interesting that he says, "Do not be deceived." And the reason I believe he says that is because it's really easily to what? To be deceived. And to start thinking, you know what? I can hang out with those people. I can be just like those people. And they're not really going to have an influence on me. They're not going to corrupt who I am. They're not going to corrupt my morals. And yet you're hanging out with a group of people that are constantly breaking the law. Or hanging out with a group of people that are constantly doing things that are bad. And you start looking at that and think, well, they're not going to have an influence on me. But what ends up happening when you're inside of that mold, they keep trying to push you inside of that mold, and over time they start to have an influence on you. And so it's easy for us to be deceived and think it's not going to have an effect on us, but oftentimes our peer groups have a big influence on us. The other big one, and this one's so big that it's so hard for us to even grasp it. I think even as adults we have a hard time grasping this one. But one of the major influential forces in the world today, and especially in America, but really throughout all the world, is the media. The media has such an influence over us, over generating our feelings and our emotion towards certain things. And the media has a way of doing this because of the very nature of what it is that they do. The arts, right, music and theater and all those various things, they play to the emotional side of a person, right? They're designed to be aesthetically appealing. Aesthetics, right? Big word, but, you know, everybody knows what aesthetics means, right? It looks good. We like it. We like the way it looks. We like the way it makes us feel just looking at it. It has this appeal to it. And the media knows that. And so inside of the media, there are lots of forces at work that are using that particular avenue to have an influence over us, to formulate, to have a power over formulating our thinking and the way we value things and the way we think about things. And they know this, and so they use the media to have this influence over us. Now, there are all kinds of different types of media, right? We've got music, and we've got TV shows, and we've got movies, and then we've also got video games, right? And then when you look at that and you look at all the forces that play with that, they take something like a movie and they'll put a picture and they'll make it seem like it's fun and it's happy and it's entertaining and it's really good. And in the midst of all that, they're putting that in there involved with all these morals. Probably one of the biggest things out there that I can think of with this is the TV show Glee. Anybody ever, don't admit this, don't raise your hand, but the TV show Glee, right? Everybody was raving about Glee. You know, it's such a great show and all this. So one night I sat down. I don't watch a lot of TV, I'll admit. But I sat down, I was like, I got to watch Glee. So I sit down and start watching it. And there's this musical and the singing. And they're like, wow, this is kind of neat and all. But then in the midst of all this is this underlying plot, right, that runs all throughout the show. And it all has to do with this behavior. So-and-so's having a relationship with so-and-so. And all of these bad morals, right, when we look at it from all these bad morals. And they're all being put inside of this beautiful, lovey, flowery, emotion appealing TV show, right? And so what are they doing with that? They're taking something that's aesthetically appealing, that makes us feel good, we like that, and then they're teaching these morals with it. So what's the byproduct of that? It's having an influence on us where we're thinking, hey, if we want those feelings and then we've got to go along with these morals that they're teaching along with it also. And see, they put this in there and we don't even realize it. We don't even see it half the time that it's going on, but it's there and it's happening. Okay, another one of the major influences in our life, hopefully, is our parents. Now, all parents, for the parents that are here and for the non-parents that are here, all parents have an influence in their child's life. It's either through being a part of their life or through not being a part of their life. Even if a parent is completely uninvolved in the child's life, you know what that's doing? That's being an influence on them. And that's teaching you something. And that's teaching you something about life and the way that the individual feels towards you. So all parents have an influence on your life one way or another. Some of them are good influences. Sometimes parents will have a really good influence on you, and they'll influence you and help to try to mold you into what you need to be. And then sometimes parents don't help out so much with that. Now, hopefully, all of us here have had good parents. I was fortunate to be raised with good parents. Hopefully, we all have good parents, though, because at a very young age, they start to teach us the what about things, right? You know what I'm talking about, like the what about things? There are a lot of things that we learn the what about before we ever know the why about it. Now, let's think about that for a minute. When you're really young, what do you start learning? You start learning the books of the Bible. You start learning the plan of salvation. You start learning all of this stuff. And you're just taking in all of these facts. And at some particular point in time, you're taking in all these facts, and you're not even thinking about it, right? You don't even know why you're doing this. You're just doing it, and you're going along. And then at some point along the way, you go, now, wait a second. Why am I doing this? Here's what I liken this to. Everybody here seen Karate Kid? The real one, the first one, right? The new one is Kung Fu. I don't get that. But anyway, the original one, the Karate Kid, right? He wants to learn karate. So there's Mr. Miyagi, of course, you know, and he's going to teach him karate. So he convinces, Daniel convinces him to teach him karate. So he goes out there and he says, okay, I think the first one was to sand the deck, right? So he's like, sand the deck. So he's like, no, do it this way. So he does that. And then he had to paint the fence, right? Paint the fence. And then he had to wax the car, right? Wax the car. I think that was it, right? Three of them, paint the fence, sand them, wax the car. Okay. So anyway, so he goes through all that. And then he comes up and he's really mad because Mr. Miyagi's been wasting all of his time all along. Hey, when are you going to teach me karate, right? Karate. I almost messed up and said kung fu. When are you going to teach me karate? And so he comes in there and he goes, okay, now sand the deck, you know. So he starts doing that. And then Mr. Miyagi starts attacking him, right? And now paint the fence, you know, and he starts. And all of those things, all of a sudden he realizes he was being taught karate all along and he didn't even realize it. Right? Now he knows why, right? He's made the connection now between what he was doing and why he was doing it, and now he gets it. So all along, though, he didn't understand what he was doing. He thought he was just sanding the deck. He just thought Mr. Miyagi was making him wax his cars because he wanted somebody. But at the same, he was being taught how to do karate and all of this. Okay, I liken that to what we're talking about here. Our parents have an influence over us, and hopefully they're teaching us good what's, the things that we need to be doing. But you're now at a time in your life where you got to start figuring out the why. Why is that all important? Why do I need to know the plan of salvation? Why do I need to know the books of the Bible? Why do I need to know about the inspiration of the Bible? Why are all those things important? You've got to start developing those things because there are influences out there that are putting pressure on you, pushing you into a mold, and you need to decide, is that the right mold? Is the mold that my parents have been raising me to go into, is that the right mold? Am I making this my own faith? You know, one of the things that we have a tendency to do, and a lot of things, is to just blindly accept things, right? We won't even question the why, and that's why we're talking about this stuff. We've got to start questioning the why. Sometimes we just won't, we don't question the why, we just We watch the TV show. It looks good. It looks exciting. We think, okay, that's what I want to do. And so then we just start going in that particular direction. Or you're in that peer group, right? Everybody, all of a sudden, Vans are out of style and everybody's wearing, what's the other one? What's that?
DC's.
Okay, DC's, yeah. So everybody's wearing DC, so you're like, oh, man, nobody wears Vans. Those are – oh. And so all of a sudden, everybody starts wearing DC. Well, why did that change? You just kind of go along with it. You don't really know why. You know, the Vans were probably better shoes, but you paid twice as much money about the DCs just because everybody else was doing it. And you just naturally gravitate towards that, and you don't even understand, why am I doing that? We can't just blindly accept things, because if we blindly accept things, we're going to find ourselves in trouble, right? Jesus said it. He said a truth in Matthew chapter 15 and verse 14 that's important for us to always remember. He said, let them alone. They are blind guides of the blind. And if the blind man guides the blind man, both are going to fall into the pit, right? So you've got blind people that are following blind people. And what happens when blind people follow blind people? They're both lost, just kind of wandering out there, and they end up in the pit. Why? Because the blind guy, he doesn't even know what he's talking about. He doesn't even know where he's going. And he just ends up leading everybody else that's following him right into the pit, right? Brother Washington here in the back, he lost his eyesight a while back. And so he doesn't have the ability physically to see things. And so when Daniel is with him, what do? Daniel leads him around. He doesn't lead Daniel around, right? Daniel doesn't close his eyes and then let his dad, okay, let's go for a walk, right? Daniel leads his dad around. Why? Because Daniel can see things, he can see objects, he can see the cars, he leads him around that way. But at the same time, when it comes to spiritual things, guess what? His dad leads him and guides him in the spiritual things. Why? Because that's the natural order of things. He's more spiritually mature. He can see things from a spiritual perspective. And so he guides him in that particular direction. It's imperative for all of us to not just blindly accept things, but to come to a point where we can start to see things on our own. At some point, Daniel's dad's not going to be around anymore. And Daniel's going to have to be able to make these spiritual decisions on his own, as he is starting to do now in his walk with the Lord. He's going to have to start seeing these things. And that's true for all of us. We can't just blindly accept anything, but we need to start opening up our eyes, our spiritual eyes to things. I liken this to what is talked about in Acts chapter 17. In Acts chapter 17, Paul is going down to the Bereans there. And the text there specifically says, now these were more noble-minded than those in Thessalonica, for they received the word with great eagerness, examining the scriptures daily to see whether these things were so. What does that mean? That means they had a specific attitude. They weren't just going to blindly accept whatever was said when Paul came into town. They thought, this sounds interesting. He's saying all these things. He's saying this Messiah came, this Jesus came. He's the fulfillment of these particular scriptures. And they don't go, oh yeah, we're just going to believe that and follow. They went back and they actually looked at those scriptures. They said, is this true? Does this add up with what we're being taught? Does this add up with what we're being told? You see, they weren't just blindly accepting things, but rather they were looking to them and they were accepting them for what they really were when they matched up to the evidence. They understood this really was God's word and that it matched up with that. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, Paul's writing to the church in Thessalonica, and one of the important key verses in 1 Thessalonians is found in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 13, when Paul says, for this reason we also constantly thank God that when you received the word of God, which you heard from us, you accepted it not as the word of men, but for what it really is, the word of God, which also performs its work in you who believe. So the Thessalonians, they had to stop and say, okay, what is this word that we're being taught? Is what Paul, is what Silas, is what Timothy telling us, is this the truth? And they had to examine that, and they had to arrive at the conclusion on their own. They couldn't just blindly accept it. They had to determine, is this true? Can we put our trust in these words? And eventually they did, and Paul praised them for that. But one of the things he encourages them to do at the end of the book is in chapter 5, in verse 19, he says, do not quench the spirit. Do not despise prophetic utterances, but examine everything carefully. Hold fast to that which is good. Abstain from every form of evil. Now, this is one particular thought that he's encompassing in these verses here, and it's for a specific reason. Because there were going to be people that were going to come along, and they were going to tell them things that just simply weren't true. And so they had an obligation and a duty that they were not to despise prophetic utterance. In other words, when an individual was getting up and he was speaking and proclaiming the word of God, they had an obligation. Now notice what their obligation was. To examine everything carefully. And then notice what he says, hold fast that which is good, abstain from every form of evil. In other words, here comes an individual and they say, we've got words from God, and this is the way it is, and this is the way that things are going, and this is the way that... And they had an obligation when an individual got up and spoke to them. They couldn't just blindly accept what was being said. They had to examine it all carefully. And when they examined it, and they compared it with the revelation of God, they could look at that and say, okay, this is good, because it matches with God's revelation. And if it was, then they accepted it. Then they put themselves inside of that mold, because it wasn't man's mold, it wasn't the world's mold, but it was God's mold. And then he says, and abstain from every form of evil. Man, if they examine it and they realize, hey, this is from the world, this is from a man, this isn't God's will, this is God, they were to abstain from it. And notice what he calls it, evil. He calls it evil. You see, the things of the world, the things that try to force us into a mold other than the mold of Christ, is what he calls here evil, because it leads us astray. It's the blind leading the blind. It's leading us in a path of destruction. So we have an obligation, all of us, to examine everything carefully, to look at it, and to not just blindly accept things, but to accept things for what they really are. Now let's turn to Romans chapter 12 as we kind of transition into this, into looking now at the biblical charge to break the world's mold and to really be conformed to Christ. In Romans chapter 12, up until this particular point in time, he's just spent 11 chapters writing to the church in Rome and telling them all about their commonalities. The commonality of the fact that they've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. The commonality of the fact that they've all been saved through the gospel of Jesus Christ, which is the power of God unto salvation. He goes through all of this, and then he gets to chapter 12, verse 1. He says, now, what's the result of that? What should be the conclusion of all that? He says, therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. Okay, now notice, there's two types of molds. Let's just break it down real simple. There's two molds. There's the world's mold, and then there's God's mold. And we have a choice as individuals what mold we're going to put ourselves into. And we can't put ourselves into both. We can't put ourselves into the world mold and put ourselves into Christ mold, because they're diametrically opposed to one another. And so he says, do not be conformed to this world. In other words, don't make yourself fit into the mold of the world. Don't allow yourself to do that. But you need to be transformed. You need to go from where you are to where you need to meet. You need to put yourself into the mold of Christ. How does that happen? How does that take place? Well, it takes place, it starts out in the renewing of your mind. See, it starts up here. See, Christianity is something whereby we don't just blindly accept things, but we look at things and we use our rational minds, the minds that God has given us, and we examine things and we start and we change our attitude inside of our mind. And then it's going to change our attitude, or then it's going to change our actions rather than the way we live our life. Then we're going to prove what the will of God is. How? Because we've changed our mind. We say, this is what we need to do. This is how we need to live our life. We can't do this. We can't be going in this direction. We can't be watching this. We can't be saying this, because that doesn't come into conformity with being a disciple of Jesus Christ. And so we change our minds and we start walking in the direction of Christ, and it changes our actions, and then we prove what the will of God is. There's an important passage in Romans chapter 8 that helps us, that really puts this picture in there. And it's in chapter 8 and verse 29. And here he's talking about God predestined this particular mold. He had determined before the creation of the world that there was going to be a certain mold, that all of his children, that all the children of God, that all those that would be saved under the new covenant would fit a specific mold. And here's what it was. Chapter 8, verse 29. For those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son, so that he would be the firstborn among many brethren. So what's the mold? Ultimately, what's the mold that all of us ought to be seeking? The image, the mold of the Son. And so when we look at how should we live our lives, what particular mold should we be? We look to Christ. In Matthew chapter 10, and I believe it's verse 25, Jesus gives the definition of what a disciple is. He says it is enough for a disciple that he becomes like his teacher. So when we think about ourselves as disciples of Jesus Christ, what are we? What are we trying to do? We're trying to put ourselves into the mold of our teacher. In other words, we're trying in every ounce of our being to become as much like Christ as we most possibly can. See, He is the perfect mold. And we take our lives and we put them into conformity with that mold. We put them into conformity with Christ. And so how do we know what particular mold? How should we act? How should we think? What mold should we choose? Should we choose the world's mold, or should we choose the mold of Christ? When we make the determination, we say, you know what? We're not going to let the world put us in its mold. We're not going to let the world define for us what is right and what is good, but rather we're going to let our Creator define for us what is good and what is right. We're determined we're going to break the mold of the world. Well, what should we become? What should we become? We should become just like Jesus Christ. And so when we start looking at Christ, and we look at His teaching, and we look at His words as they're relayed from His mouth, and through the mouths of the apostles as He sent them into the world when He left the world to proclaim His good news message, when we look to the words of Scripture, we can see exactly what it is, exactly the type of life that we ought to be striving for, exactly the type of life that we need to be in. So, how do we do this? Well, the only way we're going to know the difference between the world's mold and Christ's mold and who He is what? To look at Christ and to study His Word and to study His Scriptures, then we can see the mold, we can see the image that we should be putting ourselves into. And the only way we're going to know that is if we actually go back and we don't just blindly accept things. We don't just blindly accept what our parents say, we don't just blindly accept what the world says, but we go out and we study it ourselves. We diligently dig in to the words of Scripture and we see who Christ is and who He desires us to be. We understand that He's the Creator of the universe and we want to please Him in everything that we do. You know, there's a big fad amongst youth culture, and it's been this way for a long time, and it will probably always continue to be that way. But youth, we always want to be different, right? We want to be different from everybody else, and so in the process of being different from everybody else, we always end up looking exactly alike. And that's epitomized in goth, right? Well, it was goth when I was growing up. Now it's emo, right? Emo is like the epitome of, we're going to be different. And the amazing thing is, you can always pin an emo person. Why? Because they look exactly alike, right? They make themselves conform to that same image. If we really want to be different in the world that we live in, if we really want to break the mold of the world, and if you really want to be different, there's an easy way to do that. And that's to accept Christ and to be like Christ. Because Christ was different. Instead of doing the whims of what people wanted and what people desired, His entire life was built around wanting to please the Father. And in the process of doing that, He didn't have to try to be different. He was different just by the very fact that He did what He did. We live in a world today that says, you know, there really is no truth. You know, you guys can believe what you want to believe, and you guys can believe what you want to believe, and we'll all just believe what we want to believe, and we're all going to be okay with that. If you really want to be different in this world, if you accept and you believe in truth, like Jesus said in John chapter 17 and verse 17, Jesus there, He's praying to the Father just as He's about to go to the cross. And He's talking specifically about His disciples. And He says, set them apart. Sanctify them in the truth. This is what's going to make them different. Sanctify them in the truth. Your word is truth. And so if the disciples, if you and I, if we'll cling to His words and we'll cling to what He says, we're clinging to the truth and we're going to be different. We're going to be set apart from the world. And to me, one of the things that's amazing about that is we can truly put ourselves in a position where nobody gets to define us. The world doesn't get to define us. The world doesn't get to push us into whatever mold it wants. But we have free will. We have a choice. Every single one of us has a choice. We can blindly accept things. That may be our choice. Or we can actually make the choice where we're going to know Christ and we're going to make ourselves after Him and after His truth. And we can make the choice that we're not just going to blindly accept things. We're not just going to let the world influence us. We're not just going to let our peers influence us. We're not just going to let the media influence us. And we're not even going to just let our parents influence us. Hopefully they're influencing us in the right direction. But we want to know that for certain. And the only way we know that is if we seek His truth and we accept His truth and we put ourselves inside of that particular mold. And so, here's the challenge. If you want to break the mold, it's really simple. Don't even think about breaking the mold. Think about being like Christ. Because if you're like Christ, guess what you're going to do? You're going to break the mold. Because it is impossible to be in the mold of the world and be in the mold of Christ at the same time. There's a passage in James chapter 4, and we'll look at this as we finish up this session this morning. James chapter 4. Verse 4, he says, "You adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility towards God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God." What's he saying there? He's saying if you're trying to fit the mold of the world, guess what you're doing? You're breaking the mold of Christ. There's no way you can be both at the same time. And so the challenge is this. If you want to break the mold of the world, be like Christ. make him the foremost important thing in your life. Seek him and seek his truth and everything. And what you listen to, and the way that you talk, and the way that you live your life, the way you spend your time, the way you spend your money, all of those things. Look to Christ and allow him to influence you and put yourself inside that mold. So there's my challenge for you, is to take from here, what's going to be the major influence on your life? What are you going to allow to influence your life? Are you going to allow your peers to influence you? Are you going to allow the media to influence you? Or are you going to allow Christ and his life to influence you? Are you going to put yourself in his mold, or are you going to let the world put you in its mold? Because the reality is this. If we don't make it a determined effort to be like Christ, guess what we're going to be by default? We're by default going to turn into the image of the world. That's just who we are. And so if we want to break that, we have to make the determination to be conformed, to transform our thinking by having the renewing of the mind. We're going to be like Christ. We're going to follow him in every single thing that we do. So there's my challenge for you. Break the mold. And here's the way you break the mold. Be like Christ. Be like Christ. Thank you so much for your time.